Vayigash elav Yehuda, vayomer biadoni, yedaber na avdecha davar biaznei adoni, va'al yichar apecha beavdecha, ki chamocha kifaro. OU Israel presents
Come in. Welcome.
Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky, and this is a show for Parshat Vayigash, for sure. And I'd have to say post-Chanukah, because most, if not all, people listening to this in any of the media that it's on, it'll be after Chanukah already. But recording is taking place on Chanukah. In fact, people feel about the last day of Chanukah that it's over already, because last night we lit 8 candles, and it takes a mindset to realize that Chanukah continues until sundown this evening. I am talking about Yom Chamishi, Thursday, the second day of Tevet, on the secular calendar, December 9th. And the second of Tevet, well, let's put it like this. Chanukah began in Kislev, but it always includes Rosh Chodesh. Tevet, Rosh Chodesh can be one day or 2 days, depending on the year type. That's one of the variabilities. This year we had 2 days Rosh Chodesh. So the first of those two was the 30th of Kislev, which doesn't always exist. And the first of Tevet, today is the second of Tevet. Eighth day of Chanukah is called Zot Chanukah. That was the focus of a mini-shir I gave the folders yesterday. And I tried to avoid making it date-specific. I slipped at one point and referred to lighting candles tonight, the 8 candles. I don't even know if that's in the part that got recorded. When I finished recording, I took a look and my recorder had shut itself off with a full SD card, and now when I put it up on the computer, I found 11 minutes rather than about 20-25 that I spoke. Okay, let's do it this way. Because it's Chanukah right now, as I say these words into my recorder, we will do Tehillim Kuf Kaf Aleph Psalm 121. Which is the one that I sort of decided on for days when we don't say Tachanun, a day when we say Hallel, for example. And this is it. Shir lama'alot, esa einai el heharim, me'ayin yavo ezri. Ezri me'im Adonai, osei shamayim va'aretz. Al yitain lamot raglecha, al yanum shomerecha. Hine lo yanum v'lo yishan, shomer Yisrael. Adonai shomerecha, Adonai tzilecha, al yad yeminecha. Yomam hashemesh lo yakecha, v'yoreach balayla. Adonai yishmorcha, mikol ra, yishmoret nafshecha. Adonai yishmoret seitecha, uvoecha, me'ata v'yad olam. Achinu kol beit Yisrael, hanatunim, batzara uvashivya, ha'omidim, bein bayam, uvein bayabasha, Hamakom yirachem aleihem v'yotziyem mitzara liyirvacha u'me'afela la'ora u'mishibud l'geula hashta ba'agala u'vizman kariv v'nomar amen. I debated what songs to put on this show. Hanukkah songs are fine for me right now, but by the time you're listening to these words, as I've already said, it won't be Hanukkah anymore. Doesn't mean you can't have a Hanukkah song, but I decided to have a mellow, very, very beautiful song about Yerushalayim. And I'll tell you exactly why I chose it. A couple of weeks ago, I was in a store, and I saw some very pretty dreidels. And I picked one up, and I particularly liked it, until I noticed that its letters were Nun, Gimel, He, and Shin. Nes Gadol Hayasham is the dreidel that I grew up with in the United States. It means a great miracle happened there, the there being the land of Israel. And the dreidel, which apparently was developed originally in Chutz La'aretz, has a shin as its final letter for the word Sham there. So I put it down, because that's not our dreidel. Israeli dreidels say, Nes Gadol Haya Po, a great miracle happened here. And I looked through some other dreidels, but the one that I really, really would have liked to have bought had the shin on it, and apparently jewelry companies and artists, craftsmen, a lot of times use a shin rather than a pei because they're expecting their products to be purchased by tourists who will bring home a familiar dreidel. Personally, I like the idea. I liked it before I came to live here, of taking home an Israeli dreidel that had a pei. That was a rare kind of thing. In fact, it had a fringe benefit if you would go to a guy and say, all right, I'll make you a deal. You pay me a dime, and I'll spin the dreidel. If it comes out on Nun, Gimel, or He, I'll give you 20 cents. If it comes out on Shin, I'll give you a dollar. Oh, wow, sure, okay, let's play. And lo and behold, it can never, ever, ever fall on Shin, because I was using a dreidel that had a pei. Anyway, that was just for catching somebody off guard. I also have always found it ironic that the shin stands for pei, meaning P-A-Y, the English word put into the pot when you play dreidel for peanuts, matchsticks, toothpicks, jelly beans, pennies, or whatever. And it's based on the Yiddish word for paying. And that's our letter, pei. And our word in Hebrew would be shalem, which begins with a shin. So one dreidel is appropriate for the opposite place and vice versa. I also realize that even in Yerushalayim, you can have a nun gimel he shin, because the Nes Gadol that happened there, you can say, was the military victory of the Chashmonaim against the Greeks. And that's localized in the Chashmonaim, Modi'in, Matityahu, etc. area of Israel. But then it dawned on me, as if I said, but seriously, folks, the Sham is Yerushalayim, because the culmination of the Maccabean revolt against Greece was not just to throw off the yoke of Greece and its oppression, but to do something positive, something that would restore temple service, religious behavior, observance of mitzvot throughout the land. And the great miracle that happened there is the icing on the cake, the cherry on the top of the sundae, however you want to put it, the miracle of the oil, which took place in Yerushalayim. So we must have the dreidel that has Nun Gimel Hei Pei, and the Po is Po Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh. Wherever the drama of the revolt took place, outside Jerusalem. It culminated in Jerusalem when the Hashmonaim came here finally to purify the Beit HaMikdash, search for fresh oil, light the lamp of the menorah, which was to become a beacon that announced, hear ye, fellow Jews, we no longer have to be afraid to observe the Torah. We don't have to be afraid to teach our children Torah. We don't have to be afraid to perform mitzvot, Brit Milah, keeping Shabbat, restoring the Jewish calendar, and everything else that goes along with it. With this long introduction, Eitan Katz, on his album Baruch Hu, has a track called Vil Yerushalayim, To Jerusalem, Your City, May You Return in Compassion, and may you dwell in it as you promised. May you rebuild it rapidly in our days as an everlasting structure and install within it soon the throne of David. This is from the weekday Amidah, one of the middle brachot of request to God is for his return to the city of Jerusalem. This does not mean to suggest that he is not present in the city now. He definitely is, but we're talking about a full, complete return to the city and everything that goes along with it. Eitan Katz, Vil Yerushalayim Irecha. After which, we will at least start the shiur that I gave to the folders yesterday, and after that, I'll pick up where the recorder failed me, or I neglected to check if it was full or not. Eitan Katz, Vil Yerushalayim Ircha.
Oh, Your permission. Eighth day of Hanukkah, it's called Zot Hanukkah. This is Hanukkah. Now the official reason for its being called that comes from the Torah reading of the eighth day. After listing from day one the gifts of the Nesiim each day to the dedication of the Mishkan, there were 12, not 8, so on the 8th day we read 8, 9, 10, 11, and 12. That's the reading of the 8th day. And then a summary. And the summary starts with Zot Chanukat HaMizbeach. This is the dedication of the Mizbeach. Dedication of the Mizbeach means dedication of the Beit HaMikdash, of the Mishkan, and then later the Beit HaMikdash. And then the rededication of the Beit HaMikdash in Chanukah. But there's something else to the word Zot Chanukah, this is Chanukah, as if to say, if you're wondering what Chanukah is, this is what it is. Eighth day. Eighth day means there had to have been a first, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh, which means it's not the eighth day that's the crucial thing, it's the eighth days that are crucial. Train of thought. What do you call the third Shabbos meal? What's it called? It's called Su'udah Shlishit, which means the third meal, but it's also called, by its older name, which we grew up with, Shalashudas. Shalashudas means Shalosh Su'udot. The third meal is called three meals, because it can't be a third unless there was a first and a second. And the point is not made by the first or the second, because any day gets a first and a second meal in those days. It's the third meal that is representative of the three meals. Similarly, the eighth day of Hanukkah is representative of 8 days of Hanukkah. I've said this in different ways, but I have a new twist to it. We sing in Ma'oz Tzur, B'nei Vina Yemei Shemona Kov Ushir Urnanim. men of Bina. Bina means deep understanding. Not just knowledge, but deep understanding. Men of deep understanding established an 8-day holiday. You do not need men of deep understanding if the kindergarten version of the Hanukkah story is what they based it on. Once upon a time, a long time ago, Greek oppression and the Hashmonaim and a victory, and then they came to clean up the Beit HaMikdash and they couldn't find oil, and then, oh, they found one flask of oil, and miraculously it lasted 8 days. Therefore, men of deep understanding established an 8-day holiday. Does not exactly fit the definition of men of deep understanding. Add to this something which I really either was not aware of or forgot. If I was aware of, and it was reminded this year at our Shabbaton, which we had the Shabbos, last Shabbos, Shabbos before, no, not,
no,
I lost. Right. Last Shabbos was Shabbos Chanukah, the Shabbos before Chanukah, Parshat Vayeshev, when Rabbi Jeff Bienenfeld was our guest. And one of the things that he spoke about was really a surprise to me. Again, I say, I don't know if I never knew it, or I just forgot it, or maybe I actually didn't know it. And that is that the minhag, not the minhag, the practice, the requirement of lighting Hanukkah candles did not come at the original establishment of the holiday of Hanukkah. It came more than 200 years later, after the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. The Hanukkah story took place in the middle of the second Beit HaMikdash's tenure. 200 years or more after the Hanukkah story, we had some semblance of restoration of the monarchy, even though it was flawed by the fact that it was not descendants of David who were the kings, but it was Kohanim, which is not supposed to be, and other problems. We were still under the thumb of Greece, and then under the thumb of Rome, and things got from worse to worser, as my daughters used to say. And, I mean, it should be a word, it's not, but it should be, because you get the meaning. And the original formulation of the holiday was a victory of the Hashmonaim against the Yevanim, which reestablished the functioning of the Beit HaMikdash, which reestablished the open practice of Judaism in Israel, and that was cause for celebration. And the original format, according to this theory, was an 8-day holiday of saying Hallel and Al Hanisim in the davening, and singing praise to God for the miracles of the day. Not yet the candle business. Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Welcome back. You are listening to Torah Tidbits Audio for Parshat Vayigash, which is working out to be more of a retrospective on Chanukah. But since this is being recorded when it's still the 8th day of Chanukah, it certainly is appropriate. And I hope that the spirit of Chanukah continues enough so that you could appreciate what I am discussing in that light. Right in the middle of an 11-minute piece that survived my goof of a shiur I gave yesterday to the Torah Tidbits folders, let's pick up where we left off, and then I will add to it and perhaps change the subject as well. And if not yet the candle business, then you don't even have that part of the story to say, you know why it's 8 days? It's 8 days because the oil lasted for 8 days, but they didn't even formalize it in that practice of lighting Hanukkah lamps, candles, whatever, until much, much later. If you take that, it further strengthens the question, where'd they pick the number 8 from? Now, I've told you before, and I've written about it, but I think it's something that, when I heard this a couple of years ago, it really blew me away. The Gemara in Masechet Avodah Zarah, I think, speaks of Adam Harishon. Now, that goes back about as far as you could go back. Speaks of Adam Harishon, Adam, who, as winter approached, noticed that the days were getting shorter and shorter. And he panicked. He said, "This must be my punishment for having disobeyed God's command not to eat from the tree of knowledge of good and evil. And he's punishing me by shortening the day. It's going to continue to shorten and shorten and shorten until there won't be any daylight left, no sun, no life-giving energy, and the world will be returned to its chaos and nothingness. And I would have deserved it." The Gemara says he took upon himself 8 days to fast and pray to God that the world shouldn't be destroyed and that he shouldn't be destroyed. Then something unusual happened for him. Not for us, we know about it, but something unusual happened. The days started to get longer. And after a while, being the intelligent fellow that he was, he caught on and said, "This is nature. This is how the world works. That in the winter season, the days get shorter, and then they start getting longer. And by the way, this Shabbat, candle lighting is 4 o'clock. Last week, it was 3:59 in Yerushalayim. So it's getting later. And if you look in Torah Tidbits, you'll see next week, 4:02. So we're at the bottom, and we're on our way, or at the top, however you want to look at it, and we're on our way to longer days. The Gemara says when he realized that this was the way of the world, he celebrated with an 8-day holiday. An 8-day holiday. Why he picked 8, I'll theorize in a moment. But he, says the Gemara, celebrated an 8-day midwinter holiday. Sounds a little bit like Hanukkah. But the Gemara continues. Adam HaRishon, Adam, made this holiday for the sake of God. Later generations perverted it into pagan worship. And there were many midwinter pagan holidays for various and sundry reasons. And what I am adding to this, which I'm not adding on my own, but the Gemara does not say it, later commentaries point out, that if Adam HaRishon established an 8-day holiday and later generations perverted it to pagan worship, then a later generation, the Jewish people, in the mid-period of the second Beit HaMikdash, restored an 8-day holiday at this time of year for the sake of God. So it was a tikkun. We repaired the perversion of the generations of Avodah Zarah, idolatry, and pagan worship, and put back an 8-day festival at this time of year, almost like restoring the holiday of Adam HaRishon. It's not what it is, but it's ki'ilu. It's a piece of Gemara that jumps out at you, if you see it, and says, hey, that gives a little spin on Hanukkah. Spin on Hanukkah, get it? Dreidel, spin. It gives a spin on Hanukkah that we don't associate with the story, because our story starts during the time of the second Beit HaMikdash, the Greeks oppressed the Jews. If I am starting the Hanukkah story now from Adam HaRishon, it gives a different perspective. But there's more. And this I said last week. The main choice of a practice of Judaism that the Greeks chose to focus on and forbid. That's when my recorder turned off because of a full memory card. What I was saying was Brit Milah. I don't know if I'll go into the whole thing again. But the fact of the matter is that Brit Milah, circumcision, is not just a random selection of a mitzvah among many, many mitzvot. It is a key to understanding what Judaism is. Just as an example, when we
perform a circumcision. The father of the child, if he does it on his own, or his duly appointed representative, the mohel, will make the bracha, God who has sanctified us with his mitzvot and commanded us on circumcision. Immediately thereafter, the father of the baby, on behalf of himself and his wife, the baby's mother, says another bracha, Asher kiddishanu b'mitzvotav, God who sanctifies us with his mitzvot and commanded us, lahachniso bevrito shel Avraham Avinu, to enter this child into the covenant of Abraham. That's very, very significant. And it's not just one of the mitzvot. It's a key, pivotal mitzvah. And the Hellenists, the Greeks, saw that if they could prevent Jews from circumcising their babies, this will be an effective way to break Judaism and destroy the Jewish people. Now, number-wise, Brit Milah is not only performed on the eighth day, the significance being that 7 full days, including 1 Shabbat, always go by before a baby is circumcised. That week of creation relates to nature, and 8 represents Me'al Lateva, beyond nature. That's what we are challenged to do. There's a wonderful little film called The Eighth Day, where it takes place in pre-Hanukkah time, when it was forbidden by the Greek government for Jews to circumcise. And yet, a mother of a newborn wanted to have her son circumcised. She found out about a physician who was willing to do this quietly and privately in secret. It turns out that he was a Maccabee, and the problem was that the baby's father, this woman's husband, was a Hellenized Jew, one very glad to accept the Greek culture. And he even had a deal for his vineyards to sell wine to the Greek garrison, and he was very, very happy. What are we going to mutilate our son for? And especially with the risk that it is now. Turns out that he was an academy mate of this physician, and they have a debate the night before the intended brit. But one of the things that comes out there is nature, 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 which is what the Greek Hellenized Jew was talking about. And the Jewish point is, beyond the 7 days, there is an eighth day. That is symbolic additionally because of the existence of Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach, the 7 Noahide laws or categories of law, where that number 7 represents the natural element of earth. A human being, any human being, is expected to maintain these 7 categories of basic, decent, society-benefiting laws. Common sense, logical, reasonable. Anything beyond that, from a Jewish perspective, belongs to the higher spiritual aspiration of the individual, because he is told anybody, any human being, has to behave like a decent human being. But if you want to be a more spiritual-minded person, you have to rise above nature and go beyond nature. And that's represented by Avraham Avinu, Father Abraham, receiving the 8th command to circumcise on the 8th day, symbolizing that we, the Jewish people who are his descendants, symbolizing the challenge to be not only decent human beings, but to become spiritual, elevated people through the observance and performance of mitzvot. And my point was, if the Greeks were trying to choke off that circumcision and the victory of the Chashmonaim, the Hasmoneans, was able not only to restore the temple to its function, but was able to bring Brit Milah back to the Jewish people, take it out of hiding, make it public again, and encourage people to do it, and everything else that goes along with it, then this is the symbol of our victory over the Greeks. It was not just they were physically oppressing us and we overthrew them and removed their yoke. They were choking us religiously, spiritually, and we were victorious against them. Therefore, men of deep understanding says, you know what? The nature of the holiday of Hanukkah will carry with it the significance of this victory, and therefore they established an 8-day chag, an 8-day festival. No other number of days would have worked. And if you think about it for a moment, to add something else to the pot, if Chanukah is the rededication of the temple, which it is, and the Torah reading on each of the 8 days of Chanukah is about the original dedication of the tabernacles, the Mishkan, in the time of Moshe and that generation, then that dedication was a 12-day process. So why didn't our sages say, we have a holiday of a rededication of the temple, 12 days corresponding to the 12 original days of dedication? They were making the other point, a different point. 8 days symbolizes rising above nature. The Hellenists wanted us to be locked in and assimilated into their culture, which worshipped, venerated, honored nature. We say nature is fine. You have to go beyond nature. Symbol, 8th day of Milah, 8 days of Chanukah. Now we add another idea to the same thing. If you look at the biblical holidays that we have, I'm talking specifically about the pilgrimage festivals, the Shalosh Regalim, we have the following. Pesach is a 7-day chag, celebrating the physical removal from slavery to freedom, but also spiritual. But that spiritual component was not realized in the 7 days of Pesach. But as soon as we start Pesach from the second night, we're already counting. And what are we counting? 7 days, and again 7 days, and again how many? 7 periods of 7 days, that total 49 days, and on the 50th day, the day that rises beyond the 7, an 8th day of sorts, that was Shavuot, that is Shavuot, which is Zman Matan Toratenu, the time of the receiving of the Torah, and that's exactly the point of Brit Milah. The Torah, the whole Torah, is our rising above basic human nature to a higher level of spiritual existence. It goes hand in hand with the physical. We don't just go to that. We don't shortcut to that. Derech Eretz Kodma LaTorah, basic human decency, comes first. And that's a lesson that many people have to learn. But once you're at that point, then you go to the 8th day. And Sukkot reflects it the same way. 7 days of Sukkot, nature, dwelling in a ramshackle shack covered with schach that comes from the ground, natural, the arbaminim, produce of the ground, water, a concern of all nature, nature, nature. And then there's a Shmini Atzeret, an eighth day of solemn assembly that celebrates the Torah, that celebrates our spiritual relationship with God. In Israel, that eighth day is not only called Shmini Atzeret, it is called Simchat Torah. And the counting is reflected in the different number of animals that were offered each day as korbanot during Sukkot, and the fact that the Torah speaks of a first day, a second day, a third day, a fourth day, a fifth day. And then after seven, it says, Bayom HaShemini, on the eighth day, Atzeret Tihyelachem. So almost borrowing the same idea of a pattern of 7 days and an eighth, our sages fixed Chanukah at 8 days. And then later generation went one better even. They said, you know what? We will light one candle the first night, two the second night, then three, four, five, six, seven. And when you're looking at your Chanukiah that has eight slots, you are very much aware of the fact that a given night, let's say, is the fourth night of eight. And the culmination is when the Chanukiah is filled, and that's what we call Zot Chanukah. This is Chanukah. This is what it's about. Not the eighth day, but the 8 days. Let's spend a little bit of time talking about Vayigash, and maybe specifically in its inadvertent, I don't know if that's the right word, role as post-Chanukah. Last Shabbat Chanukah, we read Parshat Miketz, but what do we read at Mincha? The beginning of Vayigash. Vayigash continues the story of Joseph and his brothers, but brings it to a very significant next phase, and that is the reuniting of Yosef with his father, with all of his brothers. Of course, that preceded by his revealing himself to them, having carefully hidden his identity from them in the last Sedra of Miketz, and we see the path towards reconciliation. However, the story ends in Egypt, and the book of Shemot after Vayechi begins with enslavement in Egypt. So Bereshit, as it winds down, is certainly not ending up as anything like "and they lived happily ever after." It transits from the stories of the patriarchs to the beginning of the growth of the nation. The point in Vayigash is made that Yaakov came down to Egypt with 70 souls. That included Yosef and his two sons who already were in Egypt. That did not include the wives of the sons. But there is a list of the 70 souls. But by the end of the Sedra, which ends very closed, we'll talk more about that in Yirtzeh Hashem next week, you have from these 70 souls a tremendous proliferation. Vayeshev Yisrael be'eretz Mitzrayim be'eretz Goshen. Thus Israel settled in the land of Egypt in the region of Goshen. Vayeachazuba vayifru vayirbu ma'od. They acquired property in it, and they were fruitful and multiplied greatly. 70 people mushroom into an almost nation. That's what Vayigash is. Nowhere near the happy ending of the story. And with that, it parallels Chanukah in an interesting way. Or we should say Chanukah parallels the Torah reading. Because Chanukah, happy time, victory of the Hashmonaim against the Greeks, and miracle of the oil, and yet, problems to come. 200 more years of the tenure of the Second Temple, when we were still under the thumb of other nations, when we still were plagued by civil strife, clashes among the Jewish people, and this led to the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash and to the major exile. Very parallel. You finish the Torah story of the brothers and you end up in Egyptian slavery. You finish the Hanukkah story and relatively shortly thereafter, things turn from bad to worse. So in both cases is the hopeful future, the light at the end of the proverbial tunnel. And that is the Geula, which is an aspiration of the Torah and an aspiration of Jewish history from the beginning throughout history until the coming of Mashiach and the Geula Shlema. On that note, I wish you a Shabbat Shalom, Lehishtameah.